you let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
This would mean to me. When I was a little boy, I put a magic hat on a snowman, and he came to life. I blacked out. I got all dizzy and fell over on the ground. And when I came to, I looked up, and the sky was filled with different colors. We were flying through the air together, kicking our little legs. We were free. We were free. I have that same feeling right now, sir.
Just say yes.
Yes. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, sir, don't worry. We will get you the great state of Georgia. I can promise you that, sir. Even though this is a state filled with rebukes, I will take my wife to every single town. She and I will suck as many dicks as it takes to get these votes, sir. That's not what you mean to me. The experiences we had together, I will never forget. Just being friends, you know, not in a gay way, just a politician to another politician, you know, just sharing a warm bath together. I will go door to door and ask each and every person to have a heart and vote for FDR. I will do that, sir. I will do that.
Love the guy. Crazier than shit, but I love
him. Thank you, sir.
Good evening, everybody. It is 7:02 p.m. on the East Coast, and you're watching or listening to Quite Frankly. This is Frankly Speaking. That was a clip from one of my greatest political, my most favorite political films of all time, FDR, American Badass. Oh, my God. And here we are, just chilling. Got a couple of things I want to talk about tonight, for sure. We got Evan from Price of Liberty is coming on. Evan Kozer is going to be calling in around 7:20 to talk about a few things. First thing I want to get to real quick. Going to get your calls later on as well. But I have this one video here that I want to get to. This is right out of Flint, Michigan. Now, we had been talking about Flint yesterday. In the beginning of the show. And let me get this up right quick. This is the song that you're listening to right now is Dangerous by Big Data. And man, oh man, I just got turned on to it recently. And I'm so happy I found it. Fucking speaks to me, man. Speaks to me. It's got one of those kind of like groovy ass, you know, groovy ass muse type of sounds. And I just love it. Just funky. Funky and just completely not complicated at all. Let's just groove out, yo. All right, listen to this girl, okay? Really take in what is being said right now from the streets of Flint, Michigan. Forget about Republican this, Democrat that. Forget about all that. Think about the way that people are living. Okay? Listen to this.
So, in Flint, where the water has been proven over and over scientifically that it's poison, it's toxic, it's not getting better, we pay the highest rates in the nation for the lowest quality water. We're at Mission of Hope, where their water was shut off, I think, for a $1,200 water bill. My water bills are currently $1,049 as of today. We don't want to pay it. We keep fighting to pay it, but...
What happens if you don't pay the water?
If you, historically, in Flint, if you don't pay the water bill, they will shut you off after 90 days, cap your sewer, and then they can condemn your home. And if you don't have proper hygiene for your kids, and CPS gets called in, it's nice and wonderful, and then they could take your home. So people have lost their homes.
So they cap your water. You don't have water coming in. You don't have poisonous water coming in.
Yeah.
And then they charge you for not having water coming into your...
Oh, yeah. And then if you don't pay your water bill, they will put a tax lien on your property that includes your back water bill. And people, I think 16,000 people or more lost their homes.
So you lose your... I don't know what the value of homes on here. So let's
not
say you
much
have a,
anymore.
Well, let's say you have a home that's worth $80,000, but your tax lien is $1,000. You lose your $80,000 home to a $1,000 tax lien,
and
plus your
$1,000
water bill. Which you don't have the $3,000 to pay the tax lien or the water bill. So now they have your house and your property for $2,000. And your kids.
Yeah, if you have no home, they can take your kids. Now, they keep saying they put a pause on shutoff since we made it a huge national deal. No guarantee. And we're still getting water bills.
Guys, the second that the national issue is cleared up, then people are going to be devoured by their government again. You hear that? Water. You need water for life, which means you need the government to live if you are in Flint, Michigan. And if you opt not to pay for their toxic water, if you opt not to pay for the sludge, the sewage that they are pumping into your home, then you can have your house taken away, your sewer capped, water shut off, and your children's taken away eventually. But we all know that that's just, you know, slippery slope. You can say, no, that's actually what's happening, okay? Now, stopping at having your kids taken away is actually stopping short, because we know then that if you fight off the people who are there to claim your kids, because they're not your kids, they are wards of the state. You are merely a child farmer, okay? You are merely a child farmer. You are allowed the illusion and the tradition of parenthood under this current government, okay? You are allowed the mere illusion and tradition of parenthood. But when it comes down to it, the government has arbitrarily chosen its ways, and it knows what is right, what is wrong, and it will take your kids from you, even though they are the cause of the problem. And this is what we have here. And now people will have these conversations. They'll talk about it. They'll talk about, hey, this is a, well, you see, and you got a Republican governor, and you have Democrats that fill up the entire city council in Flint, and you have this one that made that decision, this one that didn't make a decision, you see? It's all about fixing the blame, not about the problem. Not about the problem. And now, a good friend and producer of the show, our good man Les Vegetables, Red Blooded America, goes and comments on it. He says, I wonder if water utilities were privatized, if the water company would do all this to consumers, if they refuse to pay for bad service and poor product quality. No, that would not happen. Because, you know, if you have Deer Park, if Deer Park is servicing your neighborhood, and they're coming around, or Poland Spring, or Crystal Lake, or whatever the hell it is, and they come around and they deliver their jugs of water, their bottles of water, and all of a sudden people start coming down with Legionnaire's disease or something else that can only be found from, you know, stagnant water in a pond or something like that. Malaria, who knows? You name the disease, you name the level of toxicity. You had a private company that's providing water to everybody. They are dependent. You are dependent upon water, so you're dependent upon their service. You're contracting with them for their service, and they are dependent upon the sustainability of their business model by providing good water, good service at reasonable prices, and they're able to keep that up and maintain throughout attrition and all that stuff. You think that if everybody in your neighborhood starts getting sick, and you refuse to pay for the water, a private company who fears competition coming in and capitalizing on a bad deal, who fears not only just losing the business of your neighborhood, but having that leak in a PR sense and affecting other people. I mean, look at Chipotle right now. Are people forced to eat Chipotle? I know that, you know, burritos and water are two different things, but think about that. Chipotle poisons a few people in Boston, and I'm telling you right now, the lines here in Westchester, New York have never been shorter. They've never been shorter. I'm telling you, the line used to be out the door around 5 p.m. with kids getting out of school, kids getting out of detention, kids getting out of sports practice, moms and dads coming home, picking up stuff to bring home. The lines were out the door. I can walk in there at 5 o'clock right now, and sometimes I do, and I say thank you, everybody that's got E. coli or whatever the hell it was. Now I can get my burrito bowl in some reasonable amounts of time. But no, see, the government doesn't care about that. The government can threaten you with deprivation of service. They can hold you accountable to the amount of money that you have to pay. They can go and put a lien on your house, take your house. They can make it hard for you to keep custody of your children because you are now having to try to find a way to bring them up and care for them within a situation, a dire situation that they caused. You think that Deer Park can do this? You think Deer Park can do this? You think a private company can do that to people? Abso-fucking-lutely not. And what are we all talking about? We're talking about what color tie the people that should be blamed for the problem is wearing, or were wearing, was wearing, sorry. Tell me how much sense that makes. How much sense does that fucking make? Where is it? I got some more stuff here on this. And then somebody said, somebody responded. Hold on a second. I'm trying to find where the response was because I have another article that leads right into it. Somebody questioned the... Hold on, let me see here. Somebody said that it was private companies that actually made it happen or something like that. I have to find the comment so this makes a little bit more sense. But here's from Reason.com. Listen to this. From January 25th. The Flint water crisis is the result of a stimulus project gone wrong. The new water system was never a cost-cutting measure. It was an expensive jobs project. Liberals are wrongly blaming Flint's leading poison crisis on austerity measures imposed on the city by a fiscally conservative Republican Governor Rick Snyder, as wrote last week. Now, I'm still maintaining my stance, Republican, Democrat, it's government, okay? Somebody makes a bad decision, even if it was in good faith, and there you go, and we're with this result. Snyder had appointed an emergency manager in 2011 to help the city balance its books and avoid bankruptcy. However, I didn't quite realize just how wrong they were. As it turns out, the debacle is a result of Snyder's efforts to stimulate the local economy, the exact opposite of the liberal line. The whole mess occurred because Flint decided against renewing its 30-year contract with the Detroit Water and Sewage Department and switched instead to Carignan-Dee Water Authority, KWA. KWA was planning to build its own hugely expensive pipeline parallel to DWSD's to harness water from Lake Huron and service from the Genesee County area where Flint is located. This left the city in the lurch for a few years when its contract with DWSD ended, but the new facility had not gone online, prompting it to reopen a local mothballed facility that relied on the toxic Flint River as its source. More on the rank stupidity of this decision later. The rationale for the original decision to switch Flint's water providers was that in the long run, KWA would generate substantial savings for the cash-strapped city. Not only was this false, but Snyder had very good reasons at the time to believe that this was false. Documents had just resurfaced to show that now that the then DWSD director Susan McCormick presented two alternatives to emergency manager Ed Kurtz that slashed rates for Flint by nearly 50%, something that made Detroit far more competitive compared to that the KWA deal. I'm going to put this in the chat room so you guys can read on your own, because as always, reason goes in depth and I don't want to sit here reading the entire thing to you. There's a lot of different things, but in either case, however you cut it, this stuff does not happen with private contracting. At least the accountability measures of it don't. Okay. One other thing, we got 5 more minutes until Evan comes back on. And what did I want to get to? I have Milo Yiannopoulos here. This is real fun, but that's a long one. Actually, this is 4 minutes. We'll get around to this day in history later. I like getting off to that. Rutgers students smear themselves with, here we go. Check this out, guys. Now, Milo Yiannopoulos is, I want to get him on the show. I'm a very big fan of his, especially how he just antagonizes just the most rank elements of social justice warrior crowd. And he's on a lecture circuit right now, and he's hitting up all the colleges in the country, and he stopped by Rutgers I think yesterday or so, on the 9th. Was that today? Yeah, yesterday. Watch this. This is a 4-minute clip, okay? Now, he's there to talk about safe spaces and trigger warnings. And they've got these feminists and some Black Lives Matter people that are there that are ready to pounce whenever he starts talking anything that's, whenever he starts talking in his very offensive way. And what do? They start smearing fake blood all over their faces, and they put their fists in the air, and then they walk out like proud strutting pigeons, giving everybody the finger. And I look at this and I think to myself, wow, the movement is strong. The movement is so strong. What is this movement? Everybody's part of a fucking movement now. Okay? Now, whenever you get to where you're moving to, please give me a call. Tell me how it is on the other side. Please. Tell me how it is. Tell me how that utopia that you're moving toward is. Tell me how it is. Fucking first order over here. That's what we got. You ain't going nowhere. There's no fucking movements. Shut the fuck up. Read a goddamn book. Get yourself immersed into the critical thinkers of the last couple of hundred years. Get yourself immersed into that. There's many of them. Black, white, Asian. Go to Kung Fu. Go to Kung Fu. There's plenty of just mind, body, altering visions of the world. Great ways to just expand yourself and put aside all the things that you really think that are important. Mainly your skin color, genitals, how small or big your genitals may be, why no one wants to play with your genitals, and being upset that no one wants to play with your genitals, so you're going to go on a big upset rant about how, people with normal sex lives are just disgusting to you. Please, just do something that honors yourself, honors your soul, learn something about, look to the sky, for fuck's sake, even if it's fucking overcast, just contemplate. Contemplate what's behind the clouds. Do something. Do something. And you know what? You might just put someone like Milo Yiannopoulos out of business. As much as I now, someone like Milo, who I really just want to become friends with and get him on the show and all that stuff, as much as I love this guy, he's a smart, smart dude. He would be able to find other work. Trust me. But you've given him such a great job. He's so quick-witted I mean, listen to this. I know that Evan's coming on in like 2 minutes now, and I've melted away all the time as I usually do, but just watch. Whatever this be. The funny thing is everybody's getting together for a lecture. Miles starts his stuff. He's getting paid for this. There's people, there's obviously agent provocateurs in the crowd that's waiting for their time to strike. And what do? They stand up, they start chanting their mantra, and then they smear fake blood, which if anybody's ever had fake blood on them before, you know that your skin is stained red for at least 4 days. Okay, so there's going to be people walking around on Rutgers campus all week looking like they have rosacea. This is so fucking ridiculous. It's all they do. This is the group of people who think they're going to change the world by smearing fake blood on their face like they're fucking Braveheart, okay? Not so Braveheart. And carry around mattresses to make statements. These are not movements, guys. I'm not afraid to tell this to you in your face. I'd rather talk to somebody. Actually talk about your day. You know, what's bothering you? Ask real questions. Dude, there's nothing fucking motivating me. I don't pay dues to no fucking country club. I'm not part of no inner sanctum of any kind of secret group. I don't have no secret handshakes. I just want to fucking get on with my life without having to see this bullshit. I'm trying to work my ass to death to make my way in the world for the little time that we have on the world, and everybody else is smearing blood on their face and arguing about what somebody who performed at the fucking Super Bowl who didn't have any pants on was trying to tell the rest of the country about the cops. Holy shit. I'll fast forward because I don't want to take away any time from Evan. Hold on here.
And to learn more about the world around us. Up against that mission, up against what ought to be the central purpose of higher education, what ought to be the reason that we're all here, is a culture of safe spaces and trigger warnings, which seeks to insulate people from anything that might traumatize or upset them. Of course, they're not really traumatized or upset, they're just upset that someone disagrees with them. In my view, anybody who asks for a trigger warning in a safe space should be immediately expelled.
Oh, then that could not stand. That will not stand. Here we go.
Hi, it's me.
Oh, look at it. Here comes William Wallace. Oh, William Wallace, 2016. Oh, they're so brave. Oh, I guess those were the two white allies. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Look, one of them's trying to get it out of their eyes already. Yeah, you're going to be a fucking Oompa Loompa all week, you stupid cunt. You're going to look like a fucking Oompa Loompa all week. And look at the world you saved. Look around you. You made it wonderful. It's a wondrous place because of you. Thank God. Thank God you've arrived. Oh, this is great. Oh, I feel good. I feel good now. I feel like I just worked out. I'm actually going to have to work out after this again. All right, let's go on a really quick break. When we come back, I want Evan to call in, and we are going to get on with this new... Now, this story that he was talking to me about, this is a topic that I haven't seen anywhere, and I can't wait to learn about. And where I don't know how far spread it is, but especially around the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area, there is a situation going on where that has to do with children and not being able to administer their own EpiPens in school. Okay, if you're going into some kind of a severe allergic reaction and you need epinephrine or anything like that, we're going to be talking about that coming up next. Because once again, regulation. It's working with your water, it's working with your taxes, it's working with your welfare, it's working with your military, it's working with everything. Government works all the way around, right down to your education. And not even just the way that we educate the kids, how we work with them, how we tend to them when they're in buildings that they're supposed to be learning in which they're going to be learning. All right, guys, BRB, put on some music. Same song.
Zenlive.tv.
And joining us live, our good friend, Evan Kozer. What's going on, Evan?
Not much, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. So, first of all, everybody, please, and once again, just to start off, check out Price of Liberty on Tumblr. Evan does a fantastic job not only dispersing great topics of conversation, but engaging in great topics of conversation. Evan, what do you have for us? Can you fill in all the blanks of everything I just spewed out before about the topic tonight?
Yeah, sure. So I noticed that you had mentioned a little erroneously, but that's kind of my fault for not being specific when I brought this to your attention. The issue isn't just something that's plaguing Pittsburgh schools primarily. In fact, it's not just a Pennsylvania issue alone. This is something that's happening all over the world, and it's happening in specifically public school systems that are, of course, liable, or rather they're trying to cut short their liability for anything that might happen to a student who is under their care. So the issue is epinephrine. EpiPens. So when something happens, I'm no medical specialist, so I can't really explain allergies and how epinephrine works to the fullest, that a medical professional could. But basically, these EpiPens are life saving, and they buy time. They're not a cure. You know, they buy these children time to get to a hospital where they can actually be treated for whatever reaction they're having. So, you know, you're allergic to peanuts or peanut butter, you know, peanuts, peanut butter, whatever, and you come into contact with that, you go into, I think it's anaphylactic shock.
Yes.
And if you don't get epinephrine in your system, you could die, which is what has happened in a lot in those articles that I'd sent you. I mean, in Ontario, in Virginia, in Ireland, in Utah, this is happening all over the place, where schools are denying children access to this medication because of liability issues, legal responsibility.
But you're saying even if they're carrying the pen on them themselves, they're not allowed to admit.
Well, that's the thing, is that in many of these cases, and this is what has happened in Pittsburgh, even if the child is carrying the pen on their person, they're typically not allowed to use it. Now, pen is a little bit of a misnomer because they're not pens. They are needles. You know, they do, and it is an injectable. But the needle is maybe an inch long. It's very thin. I hesitate to say you can't really kill somebody with it, but I imagine somebody determined could. But that's not the point here. The point is that these teenagers, many of whom know what they're doing when they're given this pen. You know, the parents don't give these EpiPens to kids who don't know how to use them. That's not what the issue is here. The issue is that you've got teenagers and 7-year-olds even, 12-year-olds, 14, I mean, all of these young kids who know what they need to do, or friends who know, you know, hey, this is my friend so-and-so, and I know she needs this EpiPen whenever she goes into this shock. And you've got schools saying, no, you're not allowed to carry those on your person. We have to hold on to those for you. Or some schools, like in Pennsylvania, schools don't hold those items whatsoever. So you have school nurses who aren't ready to take on children who are going through anaphylactic shock who can't even carry their own EpiPens because the school won't allow them.
You know, this is almost like, and as a health and fitness professional, I also know that it's very, very, they'll tell you right there in all of your first aid classes, AED classes, CPR, you name it, that you have to realize that when the time to act is there, you just got to do it. But you also have to realize that there's a lot of things that can go wrong, and even if you are the only one around to help and you're the only one able to help, and if something does happen, you can be blamed for anything. I know that you know, when you're doing the compressions on either a kid or an adult for CPR, you break ribs. You know, you break sternum. That's example. That's what you have to do to get somebody going. And a lot of the times, when somebody is injured in the process or afterwards, people can get sued. There's plenty of precedent for people who have saved lives but still get sued because they broke bones in the process.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we learned about that in tort law when I was still in law school. I mean, there is certainly a certain, you know, a level of liability involved. But it's up to the, you know, it's up to the person risking their time and energy to save that person's life. And I mean, if you're going to break seven ribs to save somebody, it's worth it. But that somebody coming out of it with seven ribs in a hospital bill, they might sue you to cover their medical expenses. But back to this EpiPen thing, because it isn't really just EpiPens. It's all sorts of different handheld devices, medical devices, even asthma, canisters.
Or inhalers.
Not asthma canisters, but yeah, the inhalers, that's what I'm thinking of, Jesus. But even schools that are denying children, a nine-year-old girl in Utah, for instance, one of the links that I sent you, denying a nine-year-old access to her own inhaler during a coughing fit. I mean, it's absurd because the schools don't want these children. These are public schools. Don't want these children walking around with these devices that might in some way incur liability on their part. And rather than letting these parents give their kids the ability to take care of themselves, we have stateside measures being forced into law saying schools have to carry extra inhalers or schools have to carry EpiPens. At the same time that these same schools are denying kids their own medical equipment. Mm. So it's taking the right and the liberty, really. It's taking the freedom away from the parents to make that decision on their own, putting the power in the hands of the school solely, and then absolving the school of any responsibility when something goes wrong. And in a lot of the cases, and some of the articles that I sent you, these children die because they don't get the medical attention that's necessary.
It is very, 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 very interesting. It's very interesting even when it comes down to, I mean, I remember it might have been about 4 or 5 years ago that I forgot what happened where it was established that whereas many vaccinations would be mandatory, any kind of injury that would result from vaccinations, you cannot sue the vaccine manufacturer.
Right, because it's now mandatory, and since the state's requiring it, they absolve the distributor of any responsibility.
So what we're doing here, we're really living inside of a system now where in a governmental level and in a corporate level, where it's almost like the common person, the average citizen, has zero to very little choice of how they can live their lives and very little recourse whenever the only options that they're forced to consider backfire and inflict any kind of harm on their person or their livelihood of any way. So it's almost like we're living in this crazy pinball machine where there's no escape out of it. You can't make any decisions on your own, and when you do, you can be held liable for that and charged at some other level where people can take away your kids for trying to do something on your own. And when you do operate within that system, the system itself has absolutely no liability itself.
Nobody is held accountable except for you, of course, if you do something wrong. or you don't purchase your mandatory health insurance, you know, you get penalized for it.
This is shit's fucked up, man. Shit's fucked up.
When you put it in that broader context, it really makes it just sound like, I mean, we're live. We are a tax base. We are livestock from which the system draws its revenue.
It's crazy. We're like cows that work. We're seriously like just cows that work and produce. But we're not giving up milk. We're just giving up cash. We're giving up years of our life. We're giving up cash, and we're giving up offspring. Like I said before, when I was talking about Flint, and it's very, very relevant with this story too. I really, when you think about it, parenthood, and parenthood and anything you do with your kids, just being a parent is almost like just a tradition that we are allowed to maintain while we play by the rules of this government system. Because if anything happens, I mean, you look at what we were saying before with Flint, you choose not to pay the water bill. And if you don't pay the water bill and they turn off the water and they feel like you're not able to keep proper hygiene with your kids, CPS can snag them. This is a thing that is developing for our eyes, where it's almost like our children, the right to raise and to be around our children is just merely one of many privileges we have that could be taken away at any time.
Right. You're absolutely right.
Man, that's some bleak ass shit.
One of the stories that I had sent you earlier, and it's the one that hit me the most. It was a story that came out of Virginia about a 7-year-old girl who went into anaphylactic shock, went to the nurse because she's not allowed to carry her EpiPen with her in school, went to the nurse and told her that, you know, she was experiencing some of these onset symptoms. And by the time the ambulance arrived, she was already in cardiac arrest. She died that day. And it happened, of course, because she was exposed to peanut butter. Now, here's something. When you've got one child in a school building full of hundreds of other children, there's almost no doubt that somebody's going to bring a peanut butter and jelly sandwich to school. You know, it's impossible to provide the necessary environment, you know, a peanut-free environment for these kids, unless, of course, you ban peanuts. Now, you don't have to ban peanuts. You could simply just let the 7-year-old walk around with their EpiPen. But of course, parents in this scenario might see the ban on personal medications and say, fine, we have to ban peanuts too.
Well, they already have a peanut table. They've already pretty much established peanut tables within a lot of school systems. And yeah. You know, so that's already something that's actually happening, but it's sick to me. This is real disconcerting. I don't even know what the whole deal is. Like, do you want to? I want to ask, because it all comes down to something very, 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 very frustrating for me. When we talk about anything in government or you know, society, any kind of a movement that goes on there, I always end up wanting to ask, okay, but what is the end game there? What are you looking to achieve, and why do you want it this way? And for somebody to say control, it doesn't suffice as an excuse anymore. Because what is the reason for this? Wouldn't you want to have a nurse or any kind of personnel in the school that before school starts, when you're enrolling your kid, you are giving 100% permission for medical personnel that is working with the school and approved by some kind of, you know, I don't know, whatever process in line, to do whatever it is necessary to help a kid that could be helped? I mean, how do you have a school nurse that's not qualified to oversee the use and the administration of an injectable pen? I mean, that is, the doctors teach kids how to administer it to themselves when they prescribe it. I worked in a pharmacy for about 8 years. I know everything about EpiPens. Oh, well, at least I did. I probably forgot a lot about that. But I remember Imitrex used to be used to be only an injectable as well. My mother has, you know, not so much these days, but when I would, back in the 90s, when I was a kid, she had terrible migraines. And I remember even just being in Disney World in 1993, and she was getting such a migraine, and she had to pull the Imitrex pen out of her pocketbook and just shoot up in front of the teacups. You know, these are things that everybody's educated on, both parents and the patient, if the parents aren't the patient. So I don't understand why this is even a problem. Why is everybody trying to shield each other from each other while they're trying to control each other? It's ridiculous.
It's insane. It's like a negative feedback loop, you know, and I'll go back to these schools one more time. You've got these schools that say, this is our prescription medication policy. Children aren't allowed to walk around with prescriptions. And then something like this goes wrong. And parents, instead of petitioning the school to relax these policies, to enable them to give their kids the education and the tools necessary to help themselves. Instead of doing that, they petition the state to say, okay, we need mandatory education on such and such ailment, or we need this brand new medication program to make sure all schools have access to epinephrine or, you know, inhalers or whatever, when the issue could simply be resolved starting at the home in the first place.
It's true. I mean, that's such a great point to be made. If you're really talking about everybody's afraid of A, being sued, and B, being in control of the situation, then why isn't it from the beginning that, you know, I mean, the parent, the child, they know how to administer this. Allow them to do whatever they know is necessary. Allow them to call attention to anything they know that might be bad, and just to respond and accommodate whenever you can. How come we can't just really approach this? The problem here is
common sense.
It's a common sense approach, and it's a human approach. I feel like we're getting so clinical about everything, so sterile about everything, so just gears and springs, and there's no human element to anything anymore. And what are we even? And meanwhile, the narrative is all about a safe place, great place for kids and all these really nice, cozy human narratives. But the implication and the actual administration of all these ideas is the most clinical, factory made, don't touch me, gloves on, stay away, I don't want to get sued type of mechanism that you can possibly draft up.
You're absolutely right. Sterile is the perfect word to describe it.
So I don't know.
I mean, it really is a sort of machine in that sense.
Man, oh man. Man, oh man, we had old World War II Red Cross nurses as our elementary school nurses. You know, their cure for everything was drinking more water, and that's it. Drink water. Goldie.
I went to school with quite a few kids who used inhalers, and I can't imagine for the life of me these kids being forced to walk all the way to the nurse's office just to get access to something that's like, you know, that helps them live at ease.
Mm-hmm. And definitely.
And when you see, I cannot get over the fact that children have died because an adult said, no, we don't have the right to do, or, you know, we don't have the knowledge, or, you know, you're not allowed to use that pen, or.
Yeah,
I mean, it's insane to me.
To me, it would, the only thing that, see, now in a sane world, the adult in charge says, fuck you, sue me if something goes wrong. This kid needs help. Okay? That's what the adult does in a sane world. And then the appeals process and whatever kind of litigation that comes afterwards, then people should see, listen, he was acting because no one else would, and there you go. I just don't get it, especially in the communication age that we live in right now. You're telling me that nobody can get in touch with a parent quick, a point of contact of any kind, let them know what's going on. Hey, I want to do this. Do I have your permission? Yes, yes, yes. I mean, for Christ's sake, there's got to be a more human process to this. I don't know. But, dude, is there anything else on this that you wanted to – any other facet of this that you wanted to bring light to? This is an amazing story. I haven't seen this – unless I'm just not looking for it, I have not seen this cover anywhere. Well,
my girlfriend, Recognition, actually, on Tumblr, she brought it to my attention. And it was just something that I think she had heard in passing about something that happened here at a Pittsburgh school. So she did most of the legwork. She did the research. And she sent me a ton of different links about schools all over the world, that public schools that were denying children access to certain self-applied medications, like EpiPens, like inhalers. And I think the fact that this is a pervasive issue, not just in the U.S., but all over the place, really says a lot about where our educational institutions are heading, that they are, as you said, really taking on children as wards.
Yeah.
They have become the caretakers in these kids' lives.
Yeah, if government officials are able to go out there and use words like co-parenting, we are co-parents.
It takes a lot of agency away from the parents and away from the kids.
Yeah, if you're going to be that brazen to go out there and say that you're actually co-parenting, you're not just a teacher, you're not just a principal or a dean, you're co-parenting. If you're going to be that brazen to be that invasive into the life of a kid that you actually want to say you're a partner with a parent, then let me tell you something. A parent would not sit there and think about the legal ramifications of giving their kid medicine, okay, if they needed it. This is all bullshit. It's all government meddling. If just from the top down, compartmentalized education bullshit. And it's really, really disconcerting to see this. And I've not seen it reported on anything. I'm going to have to make a highlight of this entire thing and put it out there. Maybe we can get some shares.
I would like that. You know, and I think to end things – sorry, I had a piece of bread in my mouth.
It's okay. What kind of bread? Is it sourdough?
It's some sort of garlic ricotta?
Ciabatta?
Garlic oval bread. Anyway.
Oh, that sounds so fucking good.
It's really good.
Garlic.
Homemade Italian dinner right now. It's pretty great. But I want to end on the note that there's a company out there called Mylan that specializes in providing epinephrine to public school systems. And the company's entire business model is going into states that don't have legislative programs to bring medication into schools and then lobbying for those programs. So you've got companies like Mylan that make money off of school systems that don't allow parents to provide their kids with their own means to protect themselves. So Mylan is going into states like Pennsylvania, where they're lobbying pretty heavily because there's no law on the books currently. They're going into states like Pennsylvania, lobbying for programs to provide schools with epinephrine, which cuts short the parents' right to provide the same for their own kids. You know, it's the state saying, we're going to do it for you, and no, you don't have the right to do it instead.
It's a noble pursuit, man. This is a noble topic. This is something that's very, very good to have brought up and had a conversation about. And as always, I thank you very much for joining us, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Frank. I really appreciate it.
No problem. And also thank your girlfriend for bringing this up. I don't think I follow her on Tumblr. I will go and look for her afterwards. But, dude, thank you both for bringing this up. I will make a highlight, and hopefully we can bring a little bit more, couple more sets of eyes to this.
No problem. All right. Have a good night. Thanks
you
for
too.
Having me on.
Enjoy that bread, man. All right. Take care. I love a good Italian meal. You know, I've been really, really excited about simple things lately. Bread is always one of them. Never Wonder Bread, none of that stuff. Real good bread. Oval loaves, all that stuff. Great. Especially when you have the nice chunks, like whole cloves of garlic in there. Fantastic. Some like ciabatta breads have the whole cloves, and they're made with olive oil in there. But I just love, you just sit me down in front of a loaf of Italian bread with a nice hard crust, and I will just rip that shit apart throughout the entire day. A little bit of sea salt, a little bit of cracked black pepper, and some olive oil. Boom. Dip it into that shit and just eat. Then if you put a nice hunk, my mouth is watering, I'm sorry, nice hunk of the sharpest, stinkiest provolone cheese that you got. Oh, my. Dear God, I need to hear something that's going to chill me out now because I am getting semi-aroused. Let me see here. Oh, here we go. No, nothing else matters when it comes to bread and cheese and wine. I had a Spanish teacher in school at Stepanak High School. His name was Mr. Nunez, Fred Nunez. And I never learned anything in his Spanish class. Definitely didn't learn Spanish. We would talk about things like Jennifer Lopez's ass. We'd talk about UFOs and aliens. And he would give us love advice and all that stuff. It was very, very, very weird, too. You never know what kind of a mood he was going to be in. And when we would go to his class, it was right after lunch period. So we were really, really gassy. You want to talk about some food. That food at Stepanak, the chicken, popcorn chicken, and the, oh my God, popcorn chicken. What you would fart afterwards would be horrific. He would give out detentions for people who farted. Once he smelled it, once he would smell it and he knew that something happened, he got really upset and he stopped the whole class. And for 20 minutes, he did not teach us. And he threatened the entire class with a class detention if he didn't find out who it was that farted. Finally, the person that came out with it said it was them that farted. It usually wasn't me. And while he goes, come here. And he would walk up. The kid walked up. He was sitting next to his desk. And Mr. Nunez was writing it out. And he looked at it, and every time he would write, he would look up to everybody. And he looked down. And he looked up and he goes, there's a time to eat and a time to shit. This is a classroom. And that was it. Sometimes all he had to say was things like that. There's a time to eat and a time to shit. This is a classroom. And then there was one day that we weren't talking about Spanish once again. And he was talking about all his time in Spain when he did not have money. And all he would have to eat is wine and cheese. And then he would talk to us about pleasuring women. And how if you pour a little cognac on the asshole, it tastes like clams. So that's when I was like, okay, so I was saving that. You're talking about education. Right away, I mean, you think you're talking about, talk to me in Spanish, I wouldn't be able to do shit with you right now. I wouldn't be able to communicate with you if you think, but... But did I ever remember that pouring cognac, you can dribble a little cognac on a girl's ass and toss her salad a little bit and it would apparently taste like clams? I remember that. Jennifer Lopez is not talented. She is not talented. No. No, she is not. And that's just it, man. Those are the good things in life. What else is something that really makes me feel happy these days? Sweatpants. Look at these sweatpants, man. These sweatpants. These are Puma sweatpants that I got in Kohl's. I love them so much, dude. And I love sweatpants. I've got like a superhero closet when it comes to sweatpants. And these fucking things, I have them in gray. Those are the first ones I got. And I don't like sweatpants that have elastic at the bottom. I like them free-flowing and out. But these... They have elastic as well, but it's a thicker type of elastic. And it hugs a little bit better, and the pants are a little bit baggy. They kind of look like Bruce Lee type of pants, where you just, you're doing your thing, and you can just move, and you can sit in horse stance forever. And I do a lot of working out in them. I went on to Kohl's website, because I got those pants back in, I think I got them for Christmas. Best fucking pants. I can actually give you the product number if you want to go check them out. They are that good. Wait a second. Every day for us something new. I got it right here. I have to take the pants off to give you the product number. But I can tell you what they are. I went on to Kohl's the other day and I bought three more pairs. I got one more pair for... I got a pair for Lauren. I got her a medium, and I got two more larges, the black ones I'm wearing now, and another pair of grays, just in case I did something to them. It's almost like that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, Chet's shirt, where he gets all... hold on a second. Can't wait to start jamming to this shit on the air, man. Especially the Metallica stuff. Metallica and Pantera, I'm gonna do so much jamming to as soon as that room is ready. Any day now. Oh my god, I'm gonna go live at 6 o'clock and just get sweaty as shit. Alright, guys, listen. It was a great night with you guys. Thank you, Evan, for tuning in and calling in and tomorrow night we'll do a little bit more. I've got a couple things I already want to talk about for tomorrow night. Some good stuff. Some real good stuff. Matt was not here tonight. He's probably out working. So I'm going to be pulling a lot of duty by myself from now on, because I think Matt's got a new job that keeps him busy, which is good. Not gonna blame anybody for getting out there and getting paid. I sure can't wait until this pays. That's it. Let me see what's going on in the chat room first before I get out of here. Johnny Broom, Frank Schilling for Big Sweatpants Corp. I'm telling you, listen, I do not shill for things. But if Puma came to me and said, listen, I want you to be brand ambassador for, I said, don't even say it. You can pay me minimal. Minimal. I definitely need some cash. But just make sure I never run out of these sweatpants. And can you make Maybe a darker gray. I like gray stuff. I like living in the gray. Jenny Lee says, I can't wear sweatpants. Leggings are life, though. Can't do that. Nikki says, thanks for donating your time, Frank. Oh, I love it. I love it. It's a good time. Here's the other thing I want to talk to you guys about. And actually, let me get off air real quick, and then I'll come right back on and won't be a part of the episode. So let me end this one. Everybody at home on the podcast, thank you so much for tuning in once again. I hope you learned something. And until tomorrow night, stay chill, man.